This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I am here solo once again. Carrie Kasem is missing in action. I wonder if Casey Kasem used to miss his radio shows when he had to do the top 40 and he just didn't show up. I don't know where Carrie is, but apparently she's missing in action. So we're not going to do the top 40 because I would need Carrie to run those down. We're just going to go solo. Me, Alan Gervie. I don't need her anyway. Carrie, I hope you're having a good time. Next time, come and show up to work. What's up with this? What's up with missing out on a show that you would be so into? And I'm talking to you, Carrie Kasem. You would love this show because you're so into health and wellness. It's your life. Half the time you spend sitting in some kind of hot tub with these, I don't know what they are. You have to tell us what they are, Carrie. You're like getting healed. You go to Vegas and get healed in these hot tubs, whatever they are. I usually go into hot tubs just to have a beer or something, a glass of wine and relax. But you're into the fitness, you're into the wellness, and you're not here. So I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to be the stud here talking about fitness and wellness. Even though I'm a lawyer and not many lawyers are in good shape, I go to court all the time and I don't know. Do you know what the word schlub means? I don't know if I can say that on radio. It's just like people who don't take care of themselves. And there's so many lawyers who, you know, their pants are falling down, their shirt's untucked. They've got too much weight on them. They haven't exercised in probably a decade and they're stressed out of their mind. We need to fix that. We need to talk to lawyers and say, hey, you got to take care of yourself. You should be a model of fitness like Alan Gervie is. I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm not. I worked out this morning. So today on our show, we have two guests, and Carrie is not going to be able to ask them any questions. It's all me, all Alan Gervie. And the first guest is Andrea Marcellus, who is a fitness expert and life strategist. She wrote a book, The Way In, 5 Winning Strategies to Lose Weight, Get Strong, and lift your life. That's what we all need to do. She's got an award-winning app, And Life. Women's Fitness named it top fitness app in 2019. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to have Bassey Ikpe. She is a mental health advocate, and she's a New York Times best-selling author. The book is called I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying, a collection of essays on anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder. She has suffered from many years back and talks about it in her collection of essays. You don't want to miss Bazzi as she comes on the show after Andrea to talk about mental health. But let's talk about physical health right now. Andrea Marcellus is with us, I believe from New York. Andrea, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Great pleasure to be here. I want you to know I was a legal assistant for many years when I was first starting my training business.
Really?
I was.
So what's up with all these lawyers being so out of shape? Why is it? Is it because of our busy lifestyles and not only lawyers, but they just don't put in the time to get into shape?
I want to tell you, it's everyone. And half my clients are men, and it's really just our lifestyle right now. And so with my book, The Way In, and my And Life app, what I'm really trying to do is get us out of gym mentality and the diet trap. The truth is that fitness is far easier to achieve than we think it is, and it can fit within your very, very busy schedule. You just have to think about it differently and activate your life differently.
Well, wait a second here. You're talking about gym mentality and the diet trap. Yeah. Explain to us what that is. And there's a lot of people who are maybe in the new generation, younger people, who don't understand a diet trap, because people like me, I've seen so many different, I don't know if you want to call them fad diets or whatever. So I kind of know what you're talking about, the diet trap. But explain what that means to you and what gym mentality is.
Gladly. So gym mentality is, turn on your TV and you see these ads and people are training like they're going to try out for the Olympics and represent the United States. And the fact is, I mean, unless you're a professional athlete, you don't need to train that hard. It's like we've forgotten what the purpose of exercise is. The purpose of exercise is to strengthen your muscles and to have them have a certain degree of flexibility so that your bones align properly and you're pain-free, your joints move easily, and that you have the strength to, you know, pursue your life and do the things you'd like to do and lift things up and move around and participate in activities. I mean, that's what it's about. And then the biggest issue with the diet trap is that we don't know how to eat anymore. Our portions in the United States are so far out of alignment with our energy needs. That's issue number one. And then issue number two, our lives have become more sedentary. And so what we really need to do is start, number one, addressing the portions that we eat and the schedule that we eat on before we even start talking about the types of food we eat. And then once you get to that, when you take a really restrictive or limiting approach to food, that's not really a lifestyle for people. So if you lose weight or shape up in a way that doesn't resemble how you actually plan to live, it will be nearly impossible to sustain your results if you achieved any in the first place. And that's the diet trap.
And I want to talk about that a little bit more. But first, before I do that, I am a lawyer, so I have to take certain words that you use and I have to ask you follow-up questions. That's what we do in cross-examination. And I know you thought this was going to be a legal show. It's a fitness show today, even though we typically talk about the law. And it's one thing that I have to ask you about. You talked about the beautiful bodies and the promotion on TV, what we grew up seeing with the gym mentality. Wasn't there a purpose behind that? Didn't people try to strive to be something that they never would? I mean, most people aren't going to have the bodies that we see in these infomercials or these commercials or at the gym. People don't have those bodies. They don't have time to get those bodies. But still, in marketing, they seem to think people, the marketers seem to think that that's the way to get people to exercise, to get in shape. But you're saying something a little bit different, and I kind of like what you're saying because it makes sense, but doesn't it go against the classic marketing of fitness?
100% it does. And people are really tired of it, quite frankly. I don't think anybody's more powerful in the United States than the American consumer. And they're starting to say enough is enough with body shaming and with telling me what I can eat and what I can't eat. And they don't want to hear about what they can't do. They don't want to hear about what they're supposedly not, that they should be. And I've really tried to create an approach that focuses not so much on numbers on a scale, but more about how you feel, how physically capable you are. And in the process of becoming more physically capable and more healthful physically, you are strengthening yourself mentally and building confidence that way as well. So by just shifting the prize that our eye is on, we get better results and we strengthen ourselves not only physically but mentally.
So talk a little bit about the diet part of it, because you mentioned about portion size and scheduling.
Yeah.
What about food? I was on the plane last night and I was watching a documentary called Fat. I don't know if you've ever seen that documentary. It's Vinny Totterich, I think that's his name. And he talks about the myths about eating and the foods that the media has tried to tell us are bad for us.
This is a really fun thing about, I've been doing this 26 years. And so I've been through all sorts of things. And of course, I have tried everything myself. When I started this, you know, I was going to NYU and I was going to be a star. And so not only was I into fitness, but I was being an actress too. So I was highly motivated to be super lean and super fabulous and super all these things. And I never weighed so much in the pursuit of these things, because at that point in time, it was that, you know, we were being told we needed to eat 12 servings of grain a day and all this, that, and the other thing. It changes constantly. And that's why in my book, The Way In, what I ask people to do is go on a 6-week journey with me to learn about yourself. Let's not take anybody's word for what's best for you. Let's not hang out on the internet or look at the, you know, skinny girl in spinning class or the grunty guy in the gym. Why don't we take a few minutes to find out about you? What honestly makes you feel your best? And, you know, in the process, you'll absolutely start to look your best, but that's not what we focus on. And that's why we actually get results.
We're talking to Andrea Marcellus, who's the founder and CEO of Andrea Marcellus, and she helps busy people like me manage my life. I'm supposed to be managing everyone's life, and you're telling us how to manage life. Now, the book is called The Way In, and after the break, I want to talk to you about the 5 winning strategies that you talk about in the book, and also about the fitness app, because it's a really unique app. Women's Fitness named it Fitness App of the Year, the top one in 2019. So we want to talk a little bit about that. I need to leave a little bit of a cliffhanger here before we go into the break, Andrea. So tell us what the most important strategy is in The Way In.
The most important strategy is to live the rule of awesome.
Live the rule of awesome. What a cliffhanger. We're going to find out what the rule of awesome is after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive, with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers, and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
You're in charge of hiring, and Indeed has solutions, like online skills tests, which let a candidate show that they're the right hire. And we give you this magic music, which will inspire the perfect hire to begin clog dancing. Okay, there's no magic music, but skills tests, that's a for sure.
See why independent research by Silk Road shows Indeed delivers 3 times more hires than any other job site. Post your next job at Indeed.com/hire and try skills tests for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The Home Depot has a secret recipe for new kitchen appliances. Up to 40% off appliance special buys, like a stainless steel Whirlpool kitchen package for only $19.98. You get a side-by-side refrigerator, electric range, dishwasher, microwave, and for a limited time, over $1,000 off. Guess the secret's out. Save now on a Whirlpool kitchen, only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. Gas extra. See store for details. Valid through February 26th.
Your opinions are at home here. AM 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, that brings back some memories. Somehow, I don't think Andrea Marcellus is playing that music when she's working out. We're talking to Andrea Marcellus, who is the founder and CEO of Andrea Marcellus, and the book is called The Way In. She is at Andrea @Andrea_Marcellus on Instagram. You want to check that out. Tell us a little bit, Andrea, about what you mentioned before the break about being awesome. What are the trends in 2020 that will make people awesome from a fitness expert and life strategist?
Well, so it's the rule of awesome, and the rule of awesome means if it's not awesome, don't do it. And it's very simple, and it's an absolute life game changer. So if you're at the party and you're at the buffet and you're eating the mac and cheese, but it's not awesome mac and cheese, chuck it and get something else. If you're at a restaurant and you're having the chocolate cake and it's not really awesome chocolate cake, don't just eat it because it's there. You know, be discerning. And when you get in the habit of that, you start to tell yourself subconsciously that you're worth more. You're worth raising the bar, and that kind of breeds into your own self-confidence. But this applies to every area of life. Like when you go to get dressed and you pull something out of your closet and you're like, you know, it's missing a button, or you go to get dressed and you pull something out of the closet and the pants don't fit quite right. No, you have to get rid of those things. You have to let them go and just keep things that you can count on to make you feel at your best. When you have less things in your world, but all of those things are optimal and make you feel good and really contribute towards your well-being every single day, that helps you put your best foot forward in life. And then people respond to that very positively. And then that just, you know, again, breeds into your mental well-being as well as your physical well-being.
It's a great theory, Andrea, but being a lawyer, again, I have to, you know, cross-examine you on this. I hope you don't mind. I know you do. I love your enthusiasm, by the way. Here's my question. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, how many times have I eaten something that just wasn't very good? Let's say you're at a party, like you say, and you see a little piece of chocolate cake and you really want to indulge and you take a bite and it's not that good. But there's so many factors that go into whether or not you have the strength to just throw it away or whether you keep eating it. And one of them is stress in life. I'm under so much stress, I'll go and see that piece of chocolate, and even chocolate cake, even if it isn't good, for whatever reason, I just shove it in my mouth. And I'm not strong enough to say, I don't need this because it's not awesome. And when you talk about the clothes, I've done that so many times. I go through my closet and I'm looking at something and I think, I really don't wear that. I haven't worn it in a couple years. But I'm thinking, well, maybe I just will. So how does the mind play tricks on us, and how do we avoid succumbing to what our mind tells us, either because of stress or otherwise?
So what you need to do is make it so willpower is not involved. So in my methodology, we make as many things in terms of fitness, in terms of food and exercise and that kind of stuff, no-brainers in your day. We make them easy. We make them habitual. They're little tiny tweaks rather than big changes, little tiny tweaks that you can repeat over and over and over again. And that's how the brain creates a habit. And the more beneficial habits you have going on, all these little tiny things that start to be non-decisions in your day, that's, first of all, way de-stressing to just eliminate excess decisions in your day. But you get to a point where in this method specifically, you have foods, the meals you don't share, I get you to eat what I call habit foods. You know how you eat the same couple things for breakfast all the time? You do this already. You eat the same. If we make those meals that are your little habit meals that you don't even think about super beneficial, then you lose your taste for sugar and salt over time without even realizing it. So when you go to eat food socially at a restaurant, you order anything you want, which you can, you limit how much you can have of it because it just doesn't give you the same pleasure anymore over time. And then the biggest thing is that the portioning strategy I use doesn't involve calories at all. It's using your own hands. And a meal is two hands, basically, and a snack is one hand. And what I have found with people doing this over the last 10 years is that is basically an energy appropriate portion of food per person for about 2 to 4 hours. It gets you eating on a schedule. It gets your stomach emptying in between rather than grazing, so your hormones can actually start to work for you again, so that you can know I'm hungry and now I know I'm full. And also it non-surgically shrinks your stomach, so you can't eat the same portions you used to. You just literally can't. There's no willpower. It's like it feels like Thanksgiving. And so what happens is, between the habit foods, changing your taste for sugar and salt slowly but surely, and then the portioning method slowly but surely shrinking your stomach without you even noticing it, when you go out to eat socially, you eat whatever you want still. There's no elimination. There's no no-no foods, but you don't eat as many of them. And you continue to, you know, lose weight and get towards your fitness goals without really feeling like it's cost you anything. People literally don't really know how it's happening.
So do you think that that is more of a winning strategy than some of these diets that we talked about in the last segment, the fad diets or stuff that we grew up seeing in the media?
1,000%, because it's nutritionally optimal and it allows for you to enjoy your life. It allows for you to have a social life and participate fully. And one of the biggest things we really are eliminating kind of in our self-dialogue right now is just unnecessary criticism. When you judge plates of food as being good or bad, when you eat them, you are therefore judging yourself as good or bad. Neither is optimal. We can't have good or bad all the time. Things are beneficial, less beneficial. We eat all sorts of things, but that's not something we should be judging ourselves on. It's not going to lead us where we want to go. It just chips away at your soul.
And
life's hard enough.
It is hard enough. In fact, it's too hard. I wish it was a little easier. But reading a book like The Way In, those are the kind of strategies, the kind of thought patterns that people are going to think about when typically they don't. Isn't that what you're trying to do? You're trying to change the mind, the perception, where some people find it too easy to just use old bad habits and not really think about improving themselves for the future and to hold on, to lose weight and to keep it off rather than just doing it for a short period of time.
Yeah. And what you do is that just one little tweak after another in your life, like it becomes actually uncomfortable to do the old habits. So that's how it really works. It gets your mind out of it. There isn't a lot of choice involved. If it's physically uncomfortable or if you kind of feel sick, like something's too sweet or too salty, like you stop. You just stop yourself.
Yeah, like that's what I got to do. I've got to get physically sick when I eat like cookies and stuff. But so far it hasn't happened.
Like you still want to enjoy some. It's the amount. The portion is really the issue. And then the other part is the exercise. And like the app supports the book program and this methodology. And the book is really the rocket launcher for your fitness. And it helps you learn about yourself. Like I said, like I tell you what I eat, but it's completely irrelevant to you. I want you to find out things are easy for you to get, what things are easy. And you have to like your food. There's an amazing study in the book called The Milkshake Study. And this is one of my favorite things. And really, there's so much in this book that is just finding science and getting your body to just use its own amazing systems for your own benefit. And in this milkshake study, this woman basically gave a group of people this 600-calorie chocolate shake, and she measured the ghrelin level in their stomach. That's the hormone that tells you you're hungry. And when that drops, then leptin in your brain tells you stop eating. So this is how it works. And she gave them this 600-calorie shake, and she measured their ghrelin level. Then 2 weeks later, she gave them 150-calorie chocolate shake, something similar. But it was, you know, a meal replacement shake, and they knew this. And then she measured their ghrelin level. And it turns out that the 600-calorie, really decadent chocolate shake, their ghrelin levels dropped 3 times more. That means their hormones were helping them 3 times as much to stop eating when they thought the food they were eating was really amazing, that it was rich, it was satisfying, they could be done sooner.
Wow.
And here's the rub. It was the exact same shake.
The old control.
Absolutely. So what, our mind is so powerful.
Yeah.
So what we think of our food matters. You have to like what you're doing, and that's what I'm interested in. Long-term sustainable change. Who wants the diet? Who wants to think about what they're eating? Why don't we make this all a no-brainer? And then your life can be about the more important, you know, things that you're pursuing.
Reducing stress. We only have a minute left. Tell us about the And Life Fitness app.
The app is amazing. It has all sorts of different ways to work out that are super customizable. It is designed to think like me. So it's like you're coming to the studio in Beverly Hills and showing up and telling me exactly what you want to do that day. And you can dial up a workout with all sorts of customized personal options right there on the spot. Original, you've never seen it before. You better favorite it because otherwise you'll never see it again. Or you could just take classes with me and get more instruction. And the best part about it is that it has challenges in it to help you make these simple daily goals you're trying to hit every day habits. So you don't have to track all your stuff all the time, but anytime you really want to like try to up your fitness game, you could do a one-day challenge and try to stick to the food habit, the hydration habit, exercising 20 minutes a day and walking or a standing 60 minutes a day. And that's all you need to do. And when you get these little four things ingrained in some way in your day that already exists, as a habit, your life will change. And that's what the app really helps you
and
do.
So it's and slash life, right?
And slash life.
And you can get it at the App Store.
App Store, Google Play Store.
Anywhere where apps are available.
I'm trying to think, is there anywhere else we get apps? No.
No, that's where you get them. I mean, I'm sure there are other places, but we don't deal with that. There's like underground apps that we're not going to talk about.
No.
The book is called The Way In, 5 Winning Strategies to Lose Weight, Get Strong, and Lift Your Life. The fitness app is And Life, and she is Andrea Marcellus. Thank you, Andrea, for being our fitness expert today. And hopefully 2020 will be a healthy year for you and all of your disciples, as well as people like me who need to get out there and eat better and exercise more.
I agree, and I'm here to help anytime you need it.
All right. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Bazzé Iqbi. She is New York Times best-selling author, a former poet, and we're going to talk about her book, I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
AM 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Thousands of Iranian protesters are demanding top leaders step down after Tehran admitted it mistakenly shot down a Ukrainian jetliner with 176 people on board. Many of the passengers were Iranian students. Police were out in force in Tehran today amid growing tensions. A false alarm about an incident at a nuclear power plant east of Toronto was sent out to people in Ontario today. The initial message sent to cell phones to people throughout the area said the issue occurred at the Pickering Nuclear Generating Station. An hour later, Ontario Power Generation sent a message saying the alert was sent in error and that there was no danger. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is revealing the public vote for this year's induction, and Dave Matthews Band is leading the way. Rounding out the top five in order are Pat Benatar, the Doobie Brothers, Soundgarden, and Judas Priest. KABC SoCal weather, mostly clear this evening, then areas of low clouds and fog overnight, with lows in the mid-40s to around 50. More news coming up in 30 minutes, continuing coverage at KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Here are three things about Vistaprint business cards. Which do you think is true? One, our business cards are now edible. Two, our business cards now come with sound effects. Three, our business cards now ship for free. Yep, it's three. All Vistaprint business cards now ship free, and that goes for any style and quantity. You pick the style, the shape, and the paper. The result is a card you're proud to hand out. So visit Vistaprint.com for free shipping on all business cards in any style and any quantity. Just use promo code 3939. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 3939.
The Home Depot has a secret recipe for new kitchen appliances. Up to 40% off appliance special buys, like a stainless steel Whirlpool kitchen package for only $19.98. You get a side-by-side refrigerator, electric range, dishwasher, microwave, and for a limited time, over $1,000 off. Guess the secret's out. Save now on a Whirlpool kitchen, only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only, gas extra, see store for details, valid through February 26th.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
You're in charge of hiring, and Indeed has solutions, like online skills tests, which let a candidate show that they're the right hire. And we give you this magic music, which will inspire the perfect hire to begin clog dancing. Okay, there's no magic music, but skills tests, that's a for sure.
See why independent research by Silk Road shows Indeed delivers 3 times more hires than any other job site. Post your next job at Indeed.com/hire and try skills tests for free. Terms and conditions apply.
We've got 2020 vision on 2020 AM 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, giving you a new perspective to enrich your life. Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Ouch, I have lost myself again.
And we are back. I'm Alan Gervie. This is Gervie's Law. Kara Kasem isn't here today. She's lost. I don't know where she is. She's missing out on a great show, and she would particularly be happy to meet our next guest because Carrie talks about mental health all the time, and it's such an honor to have a mental health advocate, a New York Times best-selling author, Basay Iqbi, who is here to talk about her book, I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying. This is a collection of essays, and Basay, this is something that came about from your childhood and growing up, your adolescent years. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your background and how you came to write this book. And by the way, the reviews have been amazing. I particularly liked the Esquire review when it said, beautiful and compelling.
Wow.
Those are two wonderful words. When you marry those two words, beautiful and compelling, that's something that people want to read, want to hear about. Movie deal, maybe?
Maybe.
But tell us about the background for the book.
I was born in Nigeria and moved to Stillwater, Oklahoma when I was 4 years old. And from a very early age, I realized maybe I didn't understand what was wrong, but there was a way that I felt that didn't feel the way that I could see my peers feeling or people in my family. I was very moody, very sensitive.
Isn't that what all kids are like? Moody,
yes.
And sensitive?
Yes, but what I noticed in writing the book as well is that we're relatively around the same generation. So
you're a little younger than me, but thank you very much.
Well, when I was in elementary school, the Challenger explosion happened, and we were watching it live. Most of the kids across the country were watching it, and I remember how devastating that was to everybody in the class, but everyone else was able to sort of move on as the days went on, and I just got progressively more grief-stricken and broken and depressed, and it really triggered what I know now to be anxiety, and it was a heightened version of things that I'd been feeling before. So it took up until I was about 27 years old where I was finally diagnosed. But up until then, I was struggling with something. I didn't have the language for it. I didn't have the understanding of it.
But you're putting too much pressure on yourself. Weren't there other people around you who were maybe observing? I mean, obviously, you were a very sensitive kid. Mm-hmm. And then as you got older, you were a thoughtful person. Did anyone say anything? Were there any doctors involved or just friends that said, you know, maybe Basay, you're a little bit different?
Well, I had people who asked me, and the title of the book, I'm Telling the Truth But I'm Lying, comes from the idea that you want people to think that you're okay, and you project an image of okay. So they didn't see the worst of it. Like, my parents didn't know that I was up all night. I was a smart kid, so I was reading a lot of books and winning pizzas for my class. But it's strange for a child to read 300 books in a summer.
Wow.
It means that she wasn't sleeping, but it's books. It's not like I was up, you know, running the streets. Then they'd be concerned. It wasn't until I was unable to keep the facade up of all the other things, when my grades started slipping, when I wasn't working, that's when they became alarmed. But up until then, I was hiding it pretty well.
But were you aware that you were being someone who you weren't? Was that bothering you? Was there more added anxiety because of that?
I was being someone that I thought the people around me wanted to see. That I became very adept at creating and projecting a persona that people would like. I was a well-liked kid. I wasn't like a strange kid, even though I was sensitive. I felt strange, but when you looked at me, I was, you know, hanging out. I was popular. I was a cheerleader. I was all these different things, and, you know, getting good grades. And again, it wasn't until those interests started to slip that people became alarmed.
And when you talked about a diagnosis, how did that all come about? Where were you in life? And I know you've accomplished so much, and you've been a poet. You've been all kinds of, you know, been involved with acting and all kinds of stuff. When was it that you were really diagnosed that was something that was not just you feeling strange inside?
Well, I was on tour with Deaf Poetry Jam, and I was with them when we were in Scotland. And then the Broadway show moved from Broadway and toured the country. And it was during that time when I realized that it was much more difficult to keep up the facade when I was unable to regroup as often as I needed to. When you're on tour, you have to be on set at, you know, at certain times, you have to be backstage, you have to, you know, all these things. So previously, I would just disappear for a couple of days and recharge, or a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then come back and be, you know, the person that people knew. But on tour, I couldn't do that. I had to do the work every single night. And what happened was that the insomnia started creeping up, the depression started creeping up. I started to go inward and stop speaking to people. I stopped being the friendly person that everybody knew. And the stage manager was very concerned. And she asked me a few times, and I'd lied. I said, oh, I just broke up with somebody. You know, my heart's broken. That's what's causing the that's why I'm crying so much in front of people. And, you know, heartbreak is much easier to explain to people. They get that, and they're immediately like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. You know, take your time. If I said anything else, if I said I don't know why I'm crying, I don't understand why, it would be a different reaction. And I knew that. But it was we were in Chicago for one of the tour dates, and I was unable to stop the crying that usually stops in the hotel. I walked to the theater. I was backstage, and I completely fell apart in my dressing room. And it was then that the stage manager, who has been, there's something wrong, we're taking your clothes in, you're losing a lot of weight, you're not, you know, interacting, what's going on? She came into the room and saw me underneath the sink in my dressing room, just shaking and crying. And from that moment, she crawled under the sink with me, and she said, if you don't get help, you're going to die. And that was the first time I ever understood it in that perspective. It was just something that I was going through. It wasn't something that I necessarily thought was a life and death situation until that moment.
Was there an official diagnosis at that time? And if so, is it something that you became offended by, a label or anything like that?
Yeah, I was eventually diagnosed that same week with bipolar 2 disorder, or rapid cycling mixed episode bipolar 2 disorder. And there's an essay in the book called It Has a Name, where I speak about being diagnosed and how comforting it was to know that this was something that other people had experienced enough for it to have a name. But also, it scared me in a new way, because it was a label that I didn't want. I knew what bipolar was. I thought I'd seen it on TV. I've watched the news and seen people, you know, person diagnosed with bipolar, you know, doing all these crazy things that I didn't identify with. And I didn't want people to see me in that way. I'd learned at a very early age, again, to project the image that I wanted, and for people to have a name for it and other ideas that I couldn't control was very difficult for me.
So what was the difference between your perception? Because a lot of us have perceptions, like you say, we see on TV or we in a movie, read a book, versus the reality of what you learned at that time.
The reality of it is that it was a internal implosion. It wasn't this bombastic chaos that I'd been familiar with. When I read or saw people that were allegedly bipolar in movies and what have you, it was all very chaotic, and they were destroying things around them. And that wasn't my experience. It was all very an internal breakdown that I was going through. And so that was different. It was much, much quieter than I realized.
You explained it with respect to a very interesting example, something that most of us can identify with, the roller coaster, the experience on a roller coaster. And you talk about that being something that was continuous, not just that rush for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
How does that play into how you were feeling? And you're talking about more of what would they call it, a manic stage?
Hypomanic. Bipolar 2, the highs are called hypomania because they are quieter. Bipolar 1 is the stage that I think people are more familiar with because, again, it is more bombastic and loud. But for me, hypomania, especially mixed episode, which means that you're both manic and depressed at the same time, for me, that manifested in insomnia, long stretches of crying, inability to eat, just anything that looked like a normal person was taking care of themselves. I just sort of lost the will to do that. So I just wouldn't eat. I wouldn't sleep. I had racing thoughts, a lot of anxiety. It is one of the most physically uncomfortable things that I think a person can go through. And that's another thing I didn't understand. You think about mental illness, it's in your head. So to feel physically uncomfortable, to feel physical pain, to feel physical symptoms was not something that I expected or knew about.
Isn't that just some more evidence that there's something so much more to it than simply talking about an emotion or talking about being sensitive or anything of that nature?
Absolutely. It's I think people use the words they know. And right now, when people hear depressed, I think very, very sad.
Yeah.
But it's something else. I've experienced sadness and I've experienced depression, and they are worlds apart as far as I'm concerned. Sadness, you're aware of the fact that it could change in the next second, or, it's not something that feels that the weight of it is going to crush you. And depression is crushing.
When you look back, and we got to take a break in a minute, but I just want to ask you, because the first essay in the book about your childhood, I Had a Childhood, explain to us why that was so important to talk about that from the outset in the book.
It's important because I think that when you think about mental illness, when people write about it, they write about it in terms of the trauma. And I wanted people to see that there are people, there are children, there are now adults, people who have lived full lives that weren't full of pain and hurt and the things that folks associate with mental illness. I knew that I was loved. I knew that I was cared for. I knew that there were things in my life that weren't ideal, but they weren't soul crushing. I was a perfectly normal little kid, and that perfectly normal little kid, went on to develop something that wasn't perfectly normal.
I think that's so important for people to understand, because a lot of people try to, maybe in their own mind, maybe because of insecurity or just don't want to deal with it, they separate people rather than to understand that this is just like everyone else growing up. And the childhood is so important when you consider the evolution of where you are today. And you're in a great place, by the way. I mean, we want to make sure people understand that. We need to take a break. The book is called I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying. We're talking to Basay Iqbi, and we will talk more with Basay after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive, with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers, and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
The Home Depot has a secret recipe for new kitchen appliances. Up to 40% off appliance special buys, like a stainless steel Whirlpool kitchen package for only $19.98. You get a side-by-side refrigerator, electric range, dishwasher, microwave, and for a limited time, over $1,000 off. Guess the secret's out. Save now on a Whirlpool kitchen, only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only, gas extra, C-store for details, valid through February 26th.
You're in charge of hiring, and Indeed has solutions, like online skills tests, which let a candidate show that they're the right hire. And we give you this magic music, which will inspire the perfect hire to begin clog dancing. Okay, there's no magic music, but skills tests, that's a for sure.
See why independent research by Silk Road shows Indeed delivers 3 times more hires than any other job site. Post your next job at Indeed.com/hire and try skills tests for free. Terms and conditions apply.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
About a million reasons I bow down to pray, to try to make the worst seem better.
Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervie. We're here on Gervie's Law, talking about the book I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying. I have Basi Ikpe. To make sure I say that right, you're Nigerian. That's your heritage from Nigeria. Why did your family moved here when you were 3 years old?
When I was four.
Four.
My dad was already here. He went to he was at university here. My mom was in nursing school in Nigeria, and then at some point we all came together. My dad, I think he was kind of nomadic, and then when he settled down in Stillwater, Oklahoma, we came over.
Do you have any memories from Nigeria? And you've gone back there?
Yeah, I lived there for about 11 months, 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how different was that from living here? And also with your notoriety with, you know, being a mental health advocate and the work that you've done, was it any different? Do you see any different mores or different approaches to mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What were your observations?
They still kind of think that it is a personality flaw as opposed to a medical condition. I spent a lot of time, you know, having conversations like this. And because I present in a certain way, they're used to what they call mad people, quote unquote, roaming the streets. And I'm very clear about the fact that the difference between the people that you see wandering the streets and me is that I have a family that cared for me and made sure that I got the help that I needed and didn't, you know, throw me out of the house or leave me to fend for myself when I was at my worst. I'm actually proud to say that I did a lot of work to try and change the way the perception that people had of mental illness. But the flip side of that is that it was very difficult on my mental health. I had a very tough time and had to leave because it was just too much for me.
It's such a great message, though, for people who don't understand to hear basically from you, someone who is telling the truth of the matter. They're not, it's not something in the media.
Yeah.
It must have been really welcoming to a lot of people to understand where you were coming from, even though obviously it was difficult on
you. Yes, absolutely. One of the reasons I decided to be as open as I am about it is because I realized that I was in a very unique position. I had a platform that most people don't have. For some reason, when I stood up on stage, people would listen to me, and I felt that it was up to me to start having those conversations as openly as possible in ways that people could relate because they already kind of knew me. I've been more or less a public figure since I was 15. I was on a talk show on BET when I was in high school. And so people kind of always knew me. And so for them to see the struggle and the journey and then see me still have my ups and downs, but continue is something that's always very important to me. It's not this triumphant moment at the end of the movie when everything's okay now, you're cured. It's an ongoing process, and I like to show that.
And that was BET Teen Summit that you were on?
Yes.
And that must have been a great experience for you.
It was fantastic. I was very, very fortunate to be able to experience that.
You know, when you talk about people seeing who you are, and of course, you've been a poet, and the words a mirror and a window mean so much, especially when you talk about a window.
Yeah.
Tell us what that means to you.
It means that I want people not only to see themselves in the way that I speak about my mental health journey, but I want them to be able to see other people. A lot of times, again, I said that people see it as a personality defect or character flaw. So you see someone who has an attitude problem. You walk into work every day and they're just nasty and mean and you think they're terrible. But a lot of the ways that anxiety and depression show up in people is it comes off as mean. And I just want people to take a second and reflect and think, okay, is this person just randomly nasty and mean to me, or could they possibly be dealing with something that they may not even know about? And I wanted to open up levels and chambers of empathy that aren't predicated on whether or not you can pity or feel sorry for the person, that aren't predicated on whether or not the person is nice to you and deserves your empathy. Sometimes the empathy is deserved but not earned. Because people are going through so much, and I just want people to take a moment and think about that and consider that, but that before, you know, lashing out.
Interesting, because a couple of minutes ago you mentioned, when you were talking about Nigeria, you talked about a medical condition. Those were your words. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how this is a medical condition and what kind of treatment is helpful versus people just saying, you know, they used to say in the olden days, just snap out of it, or, you know, smarten up.
Yeah.
But when you talk about a medical condition, people should really understand that there's certain ways to treat it, which are more beneficial and are necessary.
Yeah. It's a chemical imbalance. The way that your brain processes information is different. It's interesting to me that people dismiss mental health when your brain is the most serious organ that you have. It controls everything. And if it's misfiring in some way, it affects so much. I personally am in treatment in that I take medication twice a day, and I also see a therapist. The levels have changed. A couple of years ago, I was going through a very serious depressive episode that I thought I wasn't going to make it out of, and I had to see my therapist, I think, 4 or 5 times a week. I had to change my dosage of medication to about 400 to 500 milligrams. And now because I'm doing better, I see her on a as needed basis.
Right.
But my medication has gone down from 450 to like 150, 200, because I'm an ongoing process of feeling better and doing what I need to do to make sure that I stay healthy. That means a lot of environmental changes. There are things that I am very aware that I cannot do. I'm not one of those people that think you can still do anything. There are certain things that are a little bit too high pressure for me. I couldn't be president. I couldn't be CEO
I don't know. Anyone
could be. Maybe,
apparently anyone could be president, but that's another story. I want to ask you, we've got a couple more minutes. I want to ask you about the Seaway Project. I think it's so fascinating. And the way that you've talked about a mental condition as a medical condition, which is so important for people to understand, with proper treatment, that people can thrive and
yes.
do wonderfully well. Unfortunately, though, suicide is something we have to talk about, and you've devoted a lot of your time and energy to the Seaway Project.
Yes. The Seaway Project is named for a young girl by the name of Seaway Monsanto. I'd known her since she was about 4 years old, and at the age of 15, she took her own life. And this is someone that I'd known for years, and her mother had devoted her entire life to making sure that she was okay, getting her treatment early, making sure that she had the support necessary, but it still wasn't enough. And when Seaway passed, I thought about all the people who didn't have a Dion Monsanto in their lives, who didn't have
The support.
I'm not a nonprofit person. I just wanted people to be able to tell their own stories, to be able to see that there are people who have similar stories, because so much of it is feeling like you're alone in it, that you're the only person going through that. So to know and to hear that there are other people who are there, who are also having questions, who also have maybe gotten answers at some point in their lives, it's so helpful and it's so encouraging. And I realized that so many people, when they weren't talking about it, were also not getting help for it. So giving them the space and the stage to talk about it also facilitated.
And how is that manifested with the Seaway Project? How do people find it?
Well, the Seaway Project, theseawayproject.org. Is the website. And the second Monday of July every year is No Shame Day. It's the day that I encourage people to make the phone call to see a doctor, to give the diagnosis, to finally tell someone that they need help.
That's wonderful.
And there's so much support. It's been going on for about 8 or so years now, and it's been so fascinating to see people who started with us the first day with questions and confusion and now tell their story every year, and they're thriving and doing so well. It's beautiful to see.
The book is called I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying. I love this review of it. She's just so damn funny, and her wit often makes her essays as humorous as they are heartbreaking. Mm. When you talk about humorous and heartbreaking, what a wonderful combination. Did they talk about a series, developing a series with the book?
Well, that's why I'm in L.A. I'm having conversations
about
it.
Well, do tell us.
Yeah, I'm having conversations now. I haven't made any decisions, but it's definitely something that I'm looking forward to. It's just another way to spread the message. Yeah.
And do you want to give us any hints? Is it TV, movie?
TV series is what I'm aiming for. Yes.
Great.
And that's pretty much all I can say.
All right. Well, don't say anything else. And it was also featured, an excerpt was featured in the New York Times Sunday Review,
yes.
What Bipolar 2 Feels Like,
yes.
Excerpt from the book,
mm-hmm.
which is wonderful. It's getting so much attention. The reviews are amazing. So congratulations
thank
on
you.
That. Bassey, I want to thank you for coming here. Did you hear my Canadian accent when I said
that? I did.
Bossy.
I like
wish,
it.
I'm trying my best. But I really appreciate good luck with the book and with series and anything else that you're doing. It's such wonderful work.
Thank
so
you.
Many people in my life have been touched by mental challenges. One of my best friends, his son committed suicide, and we've had this initiative called Buddy Check for Jesse, which mm-hmm. is up in Canada. So I really appreciate, at least from my perspective, what you're doing to get the word out and to help people understand how important a subject and how important it is for people to really focus on mental health.
Thank you.
So thanks for being here. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Gervie's Law. I want to thank both of our guests, Bassey Ikpe. And of course, we want to thank Andrea Marcellus for being with us in the first half hour. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.